it's hard when I look at this case, because I, as you know, do embezzlement cases primarily. Most of the time you get a case where someone opportunistically takes money, a check that comes their way, a way to manipulate some invoices, and they grab the money to feed a drug problem, a gambling problem. But that's it. It's just a kind of a sort of a clean theft of funds. But in this case, it's a little bit different because of the person that we're dealing with here. It only makes sense when you realize that we're dealing with the sociopath here, and someone with a different set of thought processes. And the only thing I can say is that, you know, it's difficult to not see this case through the victim's eyes, because they had to live this business when it was going through this maelstrom of chaos and havoc created by the defendant. It caused them to question their sanity. It caused them to question allegiances and alliances. It caused them to question their own employees. They didn't understand what was going on from their perspective, from the perspective of a rational, legal, sane sort of person who's non-sociopathic. They try to fill in the voids with their rational thinking. And the wellspring from which sociopathy rises is not someplace they go to on a regular basis. So in thinking about what's going on, they really can't. They just know that something is amiss, something is very amiss. And we fill in those voids with what we know from our rational thinking minds. And what they know is that things were not going very well at all. But the facade, as most facades, fades and breaks up after the course of events. In this case, it was no different. And it was only after the defendant was removed from the situation that you can start to unravel the entanglements and the webs of deceit to see what things really were like. The reality is that, I think as they touch, even the defense, Dr. Blister touches on, is that sociopaths are not treatable people. Sure, she may have an alcohol issue that can be treated, but in terms of her core thinking process, it is not something that they wake up and have an epiphany and say, gosh, you know, I need to do this differently. They see the problem as belonging to somebody else, not internally, that there is something that they need to do, because they simply don't have that ability to do that. It's a fault, but it's also a grim reality of the type of person that we're dealing with. I suspect the defendant will get up here and say that she is sorry, that she does get it, but those are going to be words designed to manipulate and to mitigate whatever sentence that she feels the court is going to impose on her. The truth is, I think the defendant really doesn't think that she's done much wrong, if anything. In the PSI, she amazingly tells the PSI writer that the system paid her too much, when in fact the reality is that she was the system who inputted the information that caused the double checks. But yet she rationalizes and says, the system paid me too much. And as if to rationalize further her taking of the money, she said that she was just taking the money for living expenses, as if to say, you know, I was just trying to eat my way through life, when in fact she was paid fairly well. And the money that she used, she bought a new car, liposuction, plastic surgery, paid off credit cards, and took, I think, what most people would consider to be extravagant vacations. She can try to define a way to cry to herself, but I don't think she's fooling anybody in that regard. You think that the defendant would have had an epiphany at the time of the PSI, the time of plea, and the time of addressing the court, and at the time of the PSI, but the victims found out that the defendant had a Facebook account and was going by a different name. Now, I know that under social networks, people put in different photographs of themselves, you know, make people look younger, not as heavy. They may lie about their social status and their marital status. But the defendant used the name of Kemwant Carr, K-H-E-M-W-A-N-T, Carr, K-A-U-R. And why she used that name, she may have an explanation for that. But it's clear she wanted to portray herself as a well-grounded, spiritually minded vortex of Zen calm and peace, because she has postings like, happiness is not a matter of intensity, but of balance, order, rhythm, and harmony. I will try to see my life through my heart and listen with my spirit. There's a March 5, 2010 posting that she says that her sister visited her. And I thought, you know, a rather innocuous sort of statement. But if you look at page 6 of the PSI, she tells the PSI writer that her sister died in 2008. And her brother, I think, is alive, but her sister died. She only mentions one sister from the PSI. So she either lied on her Facebook or she lied to the PSI, but she lied. And you would think that someone at this stage in her life and the proceedings and things in general, that she would learn to fly straight. And that part of finding this internal balance, order, rhythm, and harmony would be being truthful. It's not much to ask of the defendant, but I just don't think she can do that. But again, most of the postings are just kind of innocuous, sort of day-to-day life things. But one thing that caught my eye was that there was a posting about not having any money. And then it dawned on me, because I don't believe there's a drop of altruism in this defendant, is that she's fishing for someone to give her money, because she's probably at that stage in her life where she's going to need money. And so she's fishing. Now, whether that's been successful or not, I don't know. Yes, I believe the three partners at the clinic would like to address the court briefly. I've seen their prepared statements, and they are a brief condensation of what has been submitted to court previously.
In general, do you think the court should be planned?